Rock, give me a hand with that ladder, will you?
Bullwinkle, what are you doing up on the house?
I'm hooking up an antenna so we can pick up KCRW.
Bullwinkle, this is Frostbite Falls, Minnesota. California's 2,000 miles away.
But Funny Stuff with Bob Claster is on Friday nights. I just can't miss it. Give me a hand, will you?
Did you turn off the electricity before you started hooking that thing up?
Not to worry, Rock. I'm not so stupid that I...
What happened?
Rock, I'm being fried up here. I'm gonna turn into a Frostbite Falls fricassee.
Oh, Bullwinkle, you know that trick never works.
Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy, which airs every Friday night at this time. Wasn't that fun to hear? I was, for this show, digging through the archives, and I ran across that, and I thought that would be nice to hear again. That was June Foray as Rocky the Flying Squirrel and the late Bill Scott as Bullwinkle Moose. And an interview with them was featured in, I think, the second year of Funny Stuff. This show celebrates the end of 5 years of Funny Stuff, going on to God only knows how many more. But before we get on to our celebration of the past 5 years, which will include, by the way, excerpts from things such as the Tom Lehrer interview and the John Cleese interview and Rocky and Bullwinkle and Jonathan and Darlene Edwards and all sorts of things, Woody Allen, let's handle New Year's first. We have two little pieces having to do with New Year's Eve. First of all, congratulations to all of you for surviving New Year's Eve and making it in one piece to 1988. And with that in mind, here are two pieces, one by Ogden Nash and one by Shelley Berman.
Many of the 365 days of the year are followed by dreadful nights, but one night is far, oh yes, by far the worst. And that is the night of December the 31st. Man can never get it through his head that he is born to be not a creditor, but a debtor. Man always thinks the annual thought that just because last year was terrible, next year is bound to be better. Man is a victim of dope in the incurable form of hope. Man is a blemishless Pollyanna and is convinced that the advent of every new year will place him in possession of a bumper crop of manna. Therefore, man fills himself up with a lot of joie de vivre and goes out to celebrate New Year's Eve. Therefore, millions of respectable citizens who just a week before have been perfectly happy to sit at home and be cozily Christmas carolized consider it a point of honor to go out on the town and get themselves paralyzed. Therefore, the whistles blow toot-toot and the bells ring ding-ding and the confetti goes confetti-confetti at midnight on the 31st of December. And on January 1st, the world is full of people who either can't and wish they could or can and wish they couldn't remember. They never seem to learn from experience. They keep on doing it year after year, from the time they are puling infants till they are doddering octogenarians. My goodness, if there's anything in heredity and environment, how can people expect the newborn year to manifest any culture or refinement? Every new year is the direct descendant, isn't it, of a long line of proven criminals, and you can't turn it into a philanthropist by welcoming it with cocktails and champagne any more successfully than with prayer books and hymnals. Every new year is a country as barren as the old one, and it's no use trying to forage it. Every new year is incorrigible. Then all I can say is, for heaven's sake, why go out of your way to encourage it?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you? On the morning after, the night before.
Oh, God. Oh, God, 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 God. Oh, God, God. My tongue is asleep. And my teeth itch.
Where is my Alka-Seltzer?
Oh, my God, don't, Fizz.
Don't be mean, Alka-Seltzer. Dissolve. Oh, the hell with it. I'll drink the pieces. Okay. Hail, Moscow. Oh, God. Oh, come on, God, will you? Oh, hello there, David boy. How you doing there, Dave? Dave, I wonder, you think you could whisper? Dave, this is me. It's me. It's me, it's your old buddy. Dave, if you're nagging me, you'll never get it. Isn't that ridiculous? I just got a letter this morning. Do I sound familiar at all, Anna? You want to take a stab at a name? I don't know what letter it begins with. It was silly. I mean, I know my own name. I know it as well as I know mine. Oh, God. Hang on a second. Wait, Dave. I mean, I know the name, really. It's Sam, Dave. Right over there. Oh, Sam. How many Sams you know? Oh, God. Sammy Spiro, Dave. That's who it is. Old Sammy Spiro. Well, let's not quibble about pronunciation, Dave. What is it, Spiro? All right, Spiro. I'll settle for that. I don't know, fella. I don't get it. Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. Not so hot, Dave. I'm a little under the weather from last night's party. I have this little headache in my left eye. That's what I call you out to thank you for. That wonderful party you threw last night. Of course, we brought our own liquor, but you provided the electricity, and you should be thanked for that. Tell me, Dave, did I have a good time? No, I don't know, Dave. Well, at a certain point of the evening, everything's a complete blank. A few minutes after I arrived. What did I do? What? Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, boy. Oh, gee, I'm sorry, Dave. The whole window, eh? You just come right out, huh? Yeah, that's a picture window, too, isn't it, Dave?
It's a lucky thing there was nobody walking under it at the time, huh?
Oh. Oh, boy. Got him edgewise, huh? Oh, well, I'll put them back together, Dave. Those medical people are... Gee, Dave, I can't imagine how I managed to break a window. I don't have any cuts or bruises on my hands. How'd I break the window? I think... Were you very fond of that cat? You know, those things are supposed to land on their feet, aren't they, Dave? Poor little fella. How'd I manage to do that? Oh, yeah, I get the picture. Oh, God. Gee, I must have been playing some sort of stupid game there or something. What was I doing? I see, and I guess the window was Goliath. Well, gee, Dave, naturally, I'll do my best to repair your window. That's picture window, right? Yeah, well, it'll take a lot of wood. And you'll probably want a new cat, huh, fella? Yeah, well, you know, he's a goner. Dave, Dave, I wish you wouldn't be quite so descriptive about the cat, Dave. I'm not a well man, Dave. Yeah, well, first chance we get, we'll bury it all, and I'm sorry. Dave, I wonder if your mind would change the subject to something a little more pleasant, if you don't mind. Tell me, did your wife enjoy the party? What do you mean, I ought to know? I did not. Oh, Dave, it was a long, hard party. Dave, the curdy watchers may have gotten tired and stretched out for a bit. Well, I thought it was a pile of clothing, Dave. And Dave, you know how I feel about Myrna. Why, I love your wife. Now, that isn't what I meant, Dave. I mean, I love your wife the same way I love you.
That's not what I meant either. I hardly think it's necessary for you to warn me to keep my hands off you, too. What? No, Ken. Right off the hinges, huh? The whole damn door. You think you can get along without it, Dave? That's right, your bathroom is right off your kitchen. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Dave, when you come right down to it, the only real damage I caused was a broken window and a broken door, right? No, I won't forget the cat, Dave. Thank you very much.
Dave, in the shape I was in, it's lucky the only thing I threw through the window was a cat, huh?
Oh, really? Who? Oh, God. I hope she wasn't angry. That's swell. She always was a pretty good sport, your mother. Listen, Dave, the reason I'm calling, I'm having these business associates in town for the weekend, and I'd like to throw this little shindig on them. You know how small my place is. So I was wondering if I could use your place for a few hours Saturday night. Know what I mean? A few drinks, couple of laughs, you know. Dave? Dave? Come on, boy, pull yourself together over there. Dave, stop that now. I can't bear to hear a man cry. Dave, don't call me that name. It's a reflection on my parents. Now, Dave? Dave? Now, Dave?
Well, I hope that doesn't sound too familiar to you, at least not from very recent memory as of at least last night. But anyhow, that'll take care of New Year's Eve as far as our topics are concerned. But now let's go on to our overview of the last 5 years of this program. The first show aired the first Friday night in 1983, and the featured artist was Woody Allen. And it still amazes me how few people realize that Woody ever did any stand-up work, and especially that he ever made any records, and especially that those records are terrific. So let's listen to one piece which I played in that very first show and which I'm playing again, and it's called The Kidnapping by Woody Allen.
I was kidnapped once. I was standing in front of my schoolyard, and a black sedan pulls up. And two guys get out, and they say to me, do I want to go away with them to a land where everybody is fairies and elves? And I could have all the comic books I want, and chocolate, and wax lips, you know? And I said yes, you know? And I got into the car with them, because I figured, you know, what the hell? I was home that weekend from college anyhow, you know? They drive me off, and they send a ransom note to my parents. And my father has bad reading habits. So he gets into bed at night with the ransom note. And he read half of it, you know. And he got drowsy and fell asleep. Then he lent it out, you know. Meanwhile, they take me to New Jersey, bound and gagged. And my parents finally realize that I'm kidnapped. And they snap into action immediately. They rent out my room. The ransom note says for my father to leave $1,000 in a hollow tree in New Jersey. He has no trouble raising $1,000, but he gets a hernia carrying the hollow tree. The FBI surround the house. Throw the kid out, they say. Give us your guns and come out with your hands up. The kidnappers say, we'll throw the kid out, but let us keep our guns and get to our car. The FBI says, throw the kid out. We'll let you get to your car, but give us your guns. The kidnappers say, we'll throw the kid out. And let us keep our guns. We don't have to get to our car. The FBI says, keep the kid. The FBI decides to lob in tear gas, but they don't have tear gas. So several of the agents put on the death scene from Camille. Tear-stricken, my abductors give themselves up. They're sentenced to 15 years on a chain gang, and they escape, 12 of them chained together at the ankle, getting by the guards posing as an immense charm bracelet.
What a great piece of material. That's from 1965, a good, 23 years ago, from an album called Woody Allen Volume 2. Woody's records are still available, however. I think, you see them around a lot. They've been repackaged into a two-record set called The Nightclub Years. There were three albums, two on a Colpix label and one on the Capitol label. But and this package has been put out on a few different labels and with a few different album covers. But look for it, because it's well worth having there, classics in the world of comedy. And another classic artist in the world of comedy is Tom Lehrer. And that was, I think it was either the first or the second interview I ever did. And Tom Lehrer was certainly an idol of mine. If you're not familiar with his work, you're missing quite a lot, and I recommend that you buy everything that you can get your hands on. There are only three albums, and a rare 45, which I'll play for you in a minute. Tom Lehrer retired from the world of writing incredibly brilliant and clever songs in the early 60s, and as is now a professor at UC Santa Cruz. And I spoke to him on the telephone from there. And here's what he had to say when I told him that I think we need him to come back.
Well, I tell you, when Greta Garbo comes back, then I guess I'll be ready.
Considering the fact that it's been 17 years since your last album was released, this is fairly remarkable. Is this desire on the part of the public tangible to you in the ivy-covered halls of UC Santa Cruz?
I keep hearing things about this, but I really don't have anything more to say. I mean, to come back and just stand on a stage and sing the old songs again doesn't really appeal to me. In fact, performing doesn't appeal to me at all. And as far as writing, I don't really have much to say anymore. I think I said it.
Does this desire on the part of the public embarrass you, annoy you, please you?
Oh, no, I'm very flattered by it. But I've gotten better at saying no over the years. It doesn't bother me anymore.
Tell me, does the period of your life when you were an entertainer seem parenthetical to your life as a teacher, and do you regret it? In other words, if you had to do it all over again, would you keep your songs just for yourself and your friends?
No, certainly not. I'm very delighted that I did it. I had a good time doing it, and that's a common misconception, I think, too, that not on your part, but on some people's part, of saying that, you must have not liked it if you quit. But my answer to that is always, I liked high school too, but I wouldn't want to do it again. And that's where I stand on that. No, I had a good time. If it hadn't been for that, I wouldn't be able to do what I am doing today, which is to teach part-time and hang out. I would have had to have a real job, God forbid. So all of that is very worthwhile. And I got around the world, and I got to meet a lot of interesting people, and I thought it was wonderful.
I should like to introduce now the featured artist of this evening's ordeal. I'm sure that you will all agree without any hesitation that Tom Lehrer is the most brilliant creative genius that America has produced in almost 200 years, so perhaps a few words of biographical background might not be amiss. Endowed by nature with perhaps the most glorious baritone voice to be heard on an American stage since the memorable concert debut in 1835 of Millard Fillmore, endowed also with 12 incredibly agile fingers. Mr. Lehrer has had a long and varied career in the field of entertainment, starting with 9 years at Harvard University. Where it was that he first decided to devote his life to what has since become a rather successful scientific project, namely the attempt to prolong adolescence beyond all previous limits. Even before he came to Harvard, however, he was well known in academic circles for his masterly translation into Latin of The Wizard of Oz, which remains, even today, the standard Latin version of that work. But to return to his career in show business, for several years he toured vaudeville theaters with an act consisting of impressions of people in the last throes of various diseases. I'm sure that many of you here tonight still recall with pleasure his memorable diphtheria imitation. He is generally acknowledged to be the dean of living American composers and is currently working on a musical comedy based on the life of Adolf Hitler. Without further ado, Tom Lehrer.
Thank you.
a suffering is here. Life is Skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We've gained notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So if Sunday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.
That was Tom Lehrer. First, we heard a spoken introduction to his act, which he used to do from off stage when people didn't know what he looked like. And I guess people still don't really know what he looks like because his picture really isn't on any of the album covers. Anyhow, after that, we heard his rare 45 of Poisoning Pigeons in the Park. You can get the flip side of that, which is the Masochism Tango on a Dr. Demento album, but the A-side, Poisoning Pigeons, you will only hear it here, at least for the time being. Hopefully someone will reissue that so that more of the world will get a chance to own that, because it really is a terrific piece. Now let's conclude with some excerpts from a show I did with Jonathan and Darlene Edwards. If you don't know who they are actually Joe Stafford and Paul Weston, a marvelously talented singer and a wonderful pianist and arranger who are married and have been for a long time and did a lot of wonderful serious work in the field of popular music. But as a hoot, they used to appear as Jonathan and Darlene Edwards. Jonathan Edwards is a terrible piano player, and Darlene is an equally awful singer. And they were terrifically good sports in that they did the whole interview in this wonderfully deadpan style as Jonathan and Darlene Edwards. So we'll hear a little bit of the interview in which they discuss how the critics have reacted to Jonathan and Darlene, and then about their Grammy Award, which they won in the late 50s for an album called Jonathan and Darlene Edwards in Paris. And then we'll hear something which is only available on a new CD which came out. It's Jonathan and Darlene's version of the classic I Am Woman. And as I wrote in a note to Paul Weston about this, I said that this certainly disproves the fact that justice delayed is justice denied, because even though it's a little late, it's nice to hear this song finally get what it deserves from Jonathan and Darlene Edwards. Here's a brief excerpt from the interview first.
Most critics, they point out, they don't give me credit for my excitement and enthusiasm, and they just point out a few little wrong notes here and there.
Well, they've called me unique, and that I think that's sort of nice to be unique.
And one critic said, "You've never heard anything like this before." Mm-hmm. I remember that, which was a compliment.
Sure.
Your first album bears the legend, Joe Stafford and Paul Weston present Jonathan and Darlene Edwards. I understand this is an ongoing relationship. What is your relationship with the Westons?
Well, we've been their house guests for 25 years, and so we have a rather close relationship with them.
25 years?
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes they're nice and sometimes they're not. I don't get enough time to practice because he's usually writing, that music that he writes and arranges, and Darlene hardly ever gets a chance. You have to vocalize mostly at the market, don't you?
Or on the way.
Or on the way, mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they, Joe Stafford wouldn't want her singing around too much because she's supposed to have perfect pitch, and Darlene, well, Darlene doesn't have perfect pitch. We have to admit that.
Well, I try, though. I mean, Yeah. I really try.
One thing, though, that we're proud of is that we have a Grammy, and they don't, because they did all their recording in the 50s, early before the Grammy started. And while Paul Weston has one that the trustees gave him for being the first president of the Academy, it's not a real Grammy, and Jonathan and Darlene have the only real Grammy in this house.
I notice it says on the Grammy Award that it's for comedy, however.
Well, that was sort of a mix-up. I think that someone goofed at Columbia and entered it as a comedy record. You don't think it's funny, do you?
No.
Well, that's okay, because we didn't think it was too funny. We thought it was real good Paris songs. And
it could have been a misprint.
Yeah, it must have been just a typographical error or something.
Once we got up there taking the Grammy and everybody clapped and everything, that we decided, we'd just take it and take it home with us.
You know, we should maybe get that plaque redone and remove the comedy. I don't know how much that would cost.
Take out the word comedy.
Yeah.
I could maybe scrape it out myself.
I am woman, hear me roar, a number's too big to ignore. I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Oh yes, I am wise, but it's wisdom born of pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong, I am invincible. Come back even stronger, not a novice any longer, 'cause you deepen the conviction in my soul. Oh yes, I am wise, but it's wisdom born of pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong, I am invincible.
There you go. I thought you might like to hear some actual decent singing after that. And you should also know that Jo Stafford is, in her own right, a marvelous singer. That comes from Jonathan and Darlene's Greatest Hits, a CD available on the Corinthian label. And you can get that either at Tower Records, I think, or directly from Corinthian Records at Post Office Box 6296 in Beverly Hills 90212. If you lost that address, write to me. And if you lost my address, you're out of luck because they're not in the phone book. But it's Corinthian Records, Box 6296. Beverly Hills 90212. Before that, we heard some Tom Lehrer stuff from his interview, and we heard, what else did we hear? We heard Shelley Berman from the Inside Shelley Berman album, one of the best-selling comedy records in all time, of all time. And we heard from Woody Allen, and we heard Ogden Nash. And that's going to wrap it up for this show. Next week, I'll play some other excerpts from interviews and other shows we've done, the interview with Rocky and Bullwinkle, the interview with John Cleese, and a couple other pieces that are particular favorites. So anyhow, again, congratulations on making it to 1988 in one piece. I hope you didn't need to use that sense of humor too often. But don't forget to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Bye-bye, everybody, and Happy New Year.